News Talks Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air, with UEFA Champions and Europa Leagues action. Brought to you by Air Sport. Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
All right, you're very welcome along. The Monaco Juve game is underway. As there are changes, we'll let you know. But Wednesday Night Rugby brings us Jerry Thornley in studio. How are you, Jerry?
Good, thank you very much, Jerry.
And we've got Keith Wood on the line as well. Keith, good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
Let's talk about Ulster first. We get a lot of angry Ulster fans saying we never talk about them. And now the end of the season is nigh, and it's been a really disappointing season for them. I know technically they can still qualify for semi-finals, but it's a miracle.
No, I think it needs a 73-point swing, doesn't it, with the Ospreys? That ain't going to happen at the expense of Leinster and the Scarlets. No chance of that. Their season's over, so we can analyse them before the rest, because for Connacht, Leinster and Munster, there's still plenty to play for, but not for Ulster, and that's very anticlimactic, coming into a last game of the season at home to Leinster, which has been a sellout for 3 weeks. If you actually look at their stats, they're not dissimilar from last season. If they got a win with a bonus point at Saturday, they would finish the exact same total as a year ago, 69 points. Their tries for is significantly down, which is surprising given all the talent at their disposal. For me, there's always been one very simple variable with Ulster, and that is when Nick Williams was there and he was winning Pro 12 Player of the Year, whatever, he was the man that continuously got them on the front foot from where they could play their rugby. Once he was going, alarm bells sent for me. Now, Marcel Coates, they've been really, really unlucky with, in that he's only played 3.5 games for them through a long-term injury that he arrived with, and then another injury 3.5 games into his time with Ulster. In the 3 games that he started, I checked the stats on this, he had 66 carries. And that meant that Sean Reedy and Chris Henry and others could do their job as well, and they won all 3 games. So they've been unlucky in that respect, and they've got a couple of South Africans coming in next season, as well as John O'Gibbs. So they could be unrecognisable up front, but it was really odd seeing Stuart McCluskey being taken off at the weekend, having just got them over the gain line, because he's about the only player capable of doing so. But they've really lacked that go-forward momentum for their stellar back line. The players like Charles Piatow and others, the footwork and the pace, Gilroy and others, to do their thing. They've also got a glimpse into the future that Ruan Pienaar has been a bit more injury-prone this season. And it's not been a good glimpse into the future. And of course, now this Saturday marks his final ever game if he does make it to the starting lineup, which I'm hearing from today up in Ulster he should just about do.
Okay.
Even though he hasn't trained this week with this back spasm, he's obviously desperately keen to play. You hope it ain't going to end up like David Humphrey's last game when he was helped off very early in the match and something like that happens again. But it would be a fairly poignant occasion because of Pienaar's departure, but also one tinged with acute frustration and even a little bit of anger. A, because of the way Ulster season's panned out, and B, because of the way our view have decided that Pienaar must go, despite his 6 stellar years there and so many brilliant memories, including probably the try of the season this season, was it against Edinburgh at home? So it's been a very underachieving season for them. When you compare, of course, as well, particularly with Leinster and Munster, that they made it out of their pools and onto the semi-finals and are in the semi-finals with home ties, Ulster have fallen a long way short of that benchmark.
Okay. Keith, the thing about Ulster is that they do have this array of stars in the back line, pardon me, and yet you don't really feel like their forwards give the team the identity they need to give the backs the freedom to play.
No, I just think Ulster have been disappointing. Maybe they don't want us to talk about them at this stage if we're going to be criticising how they've gone, but it hasn't gone well for them. They've had great crowds, done an awful lot of things very, very well. Paddy Jackson has started to improve and grow into the role as a sort of senior halfback. But they're not bullying anybody. And Jerry's pretty spot on, actually, with the Nick Williams viewpoint and that idea that, actually, when you look at all the provinces in Ireland, our need for a non-Irish qualified huge beast of a forward is needed in all the provinces when the players go away. And actually, as more players have got into the Ireland squad from Ulster, it takes away a little bit from them, which is not the way it's supposed to be. And some you need to get the balance to be a little bit better. And I just feel that they've made mistakes. And for all the skills that they have, igniting that properly hasn't seemed to work that well. And I do think there's been a bit of fallout from Pienaar and from that sense of a guy who had made the place his home, not getting the opportunity to stay on there. And I also think Piatow has been disappointing. And he's a big money, big name signing. And he started pretty damn well. And it has kind of slid a little bit as the season has gone. In my view, when it got to play against Munster a few weeks ago, watching him stroll back after Peter Mahoney, which was just poor, and shows that there's something missing in terms of whether it was a recognition that this is the season is gone and they're just not putting it in at the end of it. That's just not something you want to see, and it's pretty tough. And I feel for the supporters up there, because they're cracking supporters. It goes really, it's a great, great spot to go, and a hard spot to go, to play or to watch a game. And, you know, I still, and have felt for a long time, that the Jarrod Payne red card a couple of years ago, that year was the year that Ulster had the chance to do something. And since then, they seem to consistently have either injuries or something wrong going on, and they haven't quite got there. I just think it's been a tad lackluster.
What will John O'Gibbs bring?
A real hard edge, because he was there for six seasons, wasn't it, with Leinster. He was involved, I think, in all three of their European Cup wins. He's learnt more, one would imagine, in Claremont, and he'll cajole them and bully them and annoy them into playing better, because and make their set piece, because their set piece again let them down last Saturday. It was in their three lost lineouts in the first half, and you know, possession is gold dust for that back line to get going. You've got to be winning your set piece as well. So I think he'll really improve their set piece game. And like I said, they brought in another couple of South Africans, Anand Botha and Scott van der Merwe, and with a fit Marcel Coetzee, that would be like a new player. That's three South African forwards in their pack next season who, you know, if they're all are fit for the entire season, so much, because there's only 4+1 overseas signings, if they're all fit and well and healthy, that makes such a huge difference to the provinces, particularly through the November window and the Six Nations window, which is 8 league games. It's like almost half the campaign. And you think of Munster's difficulties last season, I think from the halfway point on, I don't think one of their overseas players was available to them. So it's really important that these guys remain fit and well and healthy, because they're available to them all the time. So I think with their coming in and Gibbs coming in, I think there will be a much more of a hardened edge to them.
Yeah, we haven't really seen the whole director of rugby head coach thing in Irish rugby, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a suspicion that that's kind of what Leinster
are about. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if that is. Maybe it is. Like, certainly it's not their official titles and no one has said it is that. Whereas at least in Ulster, it's like, okay, I'm director of rugby, you're going to be head coach, and that all seems like a fairly clearly defined...
Yeah, it's quite a radical shake-up as well when you think that Neil Doak is moving on against his wishes, no less than Ruaan Pienaar, and Dwayne Peel is coming in, their backs coach, who apparently is a very smart operator altogether, good outside the box, will give them good moves as well as everything else they've already got in their team. So the only thing is that with all this investment, and it's considerable investment, they should be punching higher in the table, they should be punching better in Europe, and they would want to be next season, or the pressure is going to come on Les Kiss in a major way.
Yeah, sometimes, Keith, it takes outside voices to come and say, okay, look, this is exactly what the culture needs to change. But sometimes too, a little bit of a sense of exactly what it is that made the team and the organisation good in the first place. You know, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No, you don't. But I do think there are a good crop of young players up in Ulster. I think their forwards need to be dragged into shape, if we're to be honest. And when you have John O'Gibbs there as a player, or as a coach who's been, you know, in big clubs that have won, that have delivered, and that's something that's badly needed for Ulster. And I also think with all the chopping and changing with the coaches, it can become destabilising. It tends not to when you're going for a trophy, and equally it tends not to if you're at the bottom of a league and going for relegation. You're still going to fight to protect everything that you need to do, but it's when you're in that slightly nether region, there just seems to be a little lack of focus. It's very, very frustrating for everybody, from fans in particular. But yeah, I look, it's interesting when you see how Ulster have actually gone. But I mean, I don't know that Ulster have hit the highs except for that year where, you know, where that red card ruined the season.
Yeah.
Right. They had John Afoa then as well, didn't they? They just everything going for them was a chance of a generation,
good,
wasn't it?
Yeah, good players and players in their pomp. And I would say, in having Pienaar and...
Johan Muller in his pomp, yeah, Pienaar in his pomp, Afoa in his pomp.
Best mm-hmm. in his pomp.
Yep. Yep.
You know, a lot of good homegrown players as well, which have done very well. So Pienaar is gone. And I think that, you know, we've touched on that a good few times in this programme. I still don't know that was managed very, very well. And I think it it puts a bit of a chip on the shoulder for an awful lot of the Ulster supporters up there.
Yeah,
maybe they can use that to their benefit.
Maybe we've got to take a quick break. We're the lads are going to stay with us. 5-3-1-6 is the text number. Still scoreless after 12 minutes in the Monaco Juve game.
News Talks Off the Ball.
7 days a week.
Thanks to Air. With live Premier League action all this month on the Air Sport Pack.
It's Monaco nil, Juve nil. It's 15 minutes gone in that one. We're going to be talking with Declan Murphy, the jockey who had his skull broken in 12 places and lived to tell the tale. He is going to join us in studio to tell us the story of his life. Brilliant new book, Centaur, is out now. That's all coming up in a couple of minutes' time. But Jerry Thorney, the Irish Times, with me in studio, and Keith Wood is on the line. So we're talking rugby. Dave McIntyre was over in Birmingham today to speak to some of the Lions players. We're going to play out the full interview that he did with Billy Vonopola on tomorrow night's show. It's very good. But here's a little throwaway comment from the end of the chat when Billy seemed to acknowledge that some people outside and maybe inside the Lions camp don't fully believe that they can get down to New Zealand and win a series.
Do you think being part of a Lions test winning side or a series winning side in New Zealand would be the biggest 100%. Achievement of your career?
100%.
It's the ultimate.
Yes, and not just that. People keep saying they haven't lost at Eden Park since 93. So to win this series, it's going to take something special, and I think it will come. I truly believe myself, I'm not sure other people do, but I believe myself that we're on the brink of something special, and people need to get on board or not.
Thanks for your time, Billy.
No worries, mate. Thank you.
That's Billy Vonopola there speaking on behalf of Land Rover, a principal partner of the British and Irish Lions. Dave seemed to be wondering, just everybody have listened to this, and is he talking about people inside the camp when he's saying that everybody needs to get on board? Are there some Lions who maybe think, look, we haven't got a chance here?
No, I'd say the Lions have been so seldom together as a squad yet that, you know, I'm sure he's talking more about
us,
the public perception through the media. Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think, Keith? Did you have a little...
I kind of like it if he's having a little dig internally, you know. There's something... it is about trying to get everybody on board and all the players on board. One of the elements of a Lions is... you get selected, which is the first thing. You get on the plane, and a lot of guys who are selected, there's always a few that don't get onto the plane through injury. You get in the plane, which is the next thing. You play a game, which is the next step on it, and then you have to get into the test team and you have to win. You don't get all your players on the touring squad will get a chance to play in the test. So all those guys that aren't have to be totally bought into the idea of supporting the other guys, and those guys have to support the players that are playing in the midweek. You just have to get your head around that, and that you'd like to think that that's a given, and it's not, because people are human, or the rugby players are human. They have to try and deal with from being top dog in their club and their country to being second or third best on a Lions tour and still give everything to the jersey and to the rest of the players. That's the difficulty of it. So, I wouldn't read anything bad into it. I'd read it as, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Do you know that whole point that you're making there about the being second and third? Like, I understand back in the day when it was amateur and everybody was just becoming professional that maybe, you know, that was a little bit easier for people to take. But now these are professionals... like all their careers, they grew up dreaming about being full time.
Don't know if it matters, Ger. I think people kind of forget.
Well, it's their only identity now. Whereas with you guys, at least you all wanted to be Lions. Fair enough. I mean, maybe you're the wrong person to talk to because you were never second fiddle in these tours. But do you know what I'm saying? That like if you're a 15-year-old who always ever wanted to be a rugby player, and now you're being told actually you're number three here. I don't know. It's your very identity that they're getting at the core of.
Yeah, and I think that's tough and really tough for it. But I do believe that we often forget that, yes, a guy's professional. You're professional, Jerry. You get paid for what you do, as do you, Jerry, as do I. You know, that's the nature of it where we are now. It doesn't take away your emotions and the fact that it can be very downheartening for you if you don't get picked or if any of those things happen. So... it's how that blend happens, and that's why we talk about it all the time. And you know, I've chatted to people who say that's totally overtalked, and you know, this bonding is rubbish, and you're professional and all that. It's actually not rubbish.
I think you're totally right. I'm kind of making the same point. It's much harder for these guys now when it's their very identity that's being questioned, as opposed to you guys in the sense of exterior. Like, you all knew that life would continue. There was
yes.
This could, you know, if you're
well, it still continues rather than over, you know. But I do think it's unbelievably tough there. But it is like everything in this on the tour is tough, and this is what makes, you know, winning Lions tours so, you know, so amazing, because they're rare. And I'd go back to the one we lost in 2001. We had a better team than 97, playing against a very good Australian team, admittedly, but we were a better team, and we just didn't get it right. And that's very, very frustrating for me looking back on it. And it was my last chance and opportunity to play in the Lions. But it's really I like, from that sound from Vinny Vunipola, for me it is, okay, everybody's going to get on message that this is what they can't allow happen. And you have to, everybody get tuned into the idea that everything you're doing is so that you can win the series. You know, a successful Lions series, you could lose all your pre-matches and win two tests. If they win two matches, it is one of the most successful Lions tours of all time.
Yeah,
provided
for sure.
They're two tests.
Yeah, for sure. If you know, there's a good chance that they might lose all those games as well, and we'll be praying for.
But if you look at all the injuries that are floating around at the present moment in time down in New Zealand, Dane Coles is out at the moment with a concussion. Kieran Reid is out. Jerome Kino is out. Whether they'll be out come test time or not, we don't know. But, you know, it's with each one of those, for me, I'm looking at it and saying, of course you want to play against the best, but, you know, I'll take things that are redressed a little bit our way if we can, because it's a ludicrous tour. It's set up in a stupid fashion, and everything is against them. So let's try and see if anything skews it our way. We'll take every bit of it.
They could play really, really well. They could get it all right. They picked a squad full of people who want to be on that test team desperately, so they'll be treated honestly and treated well. They'll come to the first test, and that's probably a must-win game. They could win one of the test matches and four or five of the other tour matches, which would actually be quite a good tour in many respects, and yet still it'll go down in history as a losing tour.
Yeah.
That's how daunting it is.
It's pretty daunting. All right, I want to move on and talk briefly about the situation with Connacht. There, it's a weekend of derbies, and we haven't mentioned this yet, but... largely irrelevant weekend of derbies, which is a complete waste of the derby
fixtures.
Couldn't
agree with you more. When I saw those fixtures first coming out, and they made a big pomp and ceremony about corralling all these derbies into round 22, my first reaction was, why? Derbies work as it is. Why not leave them in the regular season, be it over the festive period, be it a week after or 2 weeks after the Six Nations, and that vacuum between the European Cup recommencing, that's always served the purposes very well. If it comes down to the last weekend and there are plenty of issues at stake, such as Munster going for desperately needing a top six place a year ago, the crowds will turn out. Now there's a bunch of fairly academic dead rubbers, and while they might be sellouts in some respects, it just seems like an utter waste. It just seems like messing around with the fixture list unnecessarily.
Yeah, Pro 12 still making missteps here and there when you just think, come on, let's get this together.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's really important to get this together.
Yeah, I would still say Pro 12 are doing, for what is, and it kills them every time this is said, not the premier competition, when we all look at the European competition as being the higher one. I think the Pro 12 get more right than they do wrong. And we're going to look at a final for the European competition in Edinburgh. I don't know how many are going to turn up to that one, you know. So there's an element of the look of the draw in it, and there could have been games that were in it. But I would agree. I like that special nature around Christmas, and I do like the idea of being able to kickstart your season again after the Six Nations with having a derby.
So there is a derby. Connacht are in Thomond Park. And they do have stuff to play for, because obviously they're going to end up in the European playoff.
Yeah, they're going to be away almost certainly to the English 7th-ranked team, which could be Gloucester, depending on partly how they get on the Challenge Cup. It could be Newcastle, it could be Harlequins. I mean, there's another team in there in the mix.
Northampton,
that's it, yeah. So that's an away game. And they're almost better, bizarrely, they're almost better off finishing below Cardiff. Because if they win their semi-final, the final of the playoff series would be in the sports ground. So in other words, despite finishing below Cardiff, they could meet Cardiff in the final and it would be in the sports ground. So they're almost better off finishing 8th because they have that carrot. They have to go to England, whereas Cardiff have to go to France. You could argue which one of those is the tougher. Partly depends on what you get, but it is the route to a home final playoff, which would be a fairly memorable packed house last game for Pat Lam and all those others who are leaving Connacht. But until then, they're essentially marking time, and it showed in their performance against Scarlets last weekend. They were very poor.
Yeah.
They're resting up bodies, which they're dead right to do, because they've got another 2 weeks of this playoff game, which is going to define their season. If they get through these playoffs and get the 20th and last spot in the European Champions Cup, having come within a whisker of making the quarterfinals this season, allowing for an anticlimactic Pro 12 campaign, it would salvage their season in many respects. For Munster, they're also really marking time until the semis. They've already got a home semi-final secured. So it's got nothing like the meaning it would have had had it been back in last March.
Yeah, it's been a really disappointing season from Connacht's perspective.
Yeah, lots of factors. They got their pre-season wrong. One of the fixtures was cancelled. They weren't used to playing so late into the season as they did last season by dint of reaching the final. So they just didn't get their pre-season right. They started off with a couple of home games, Glasgow and Ospreys, who were thirsting for revenge. And their away form has been poor. I think that the thing about Connacht is they clicked last season and they got momentum from the Six Nations onward in particular. It carried them to the end of the season. They played fantastic rugby and they were deserving champions, and they could have cut Leinster apart. That's how good they were in Murrayfield in that final. Something's happened to them in the course of the bad pre-season as well, and not getting it right from the start of the season, so they're a little bit snookered from the off. But also, their tries for has gone down sharply from last season. And some undoubtedly, Robbie Henshaw has been a big, big loss in terms of marshalling their defence as well. Bundy Aki's been injured, so you're missing two key components there. AJ McGinty has been missed. But it seems to me as well that they're just forcing things. They start to believe how good they were, and their skill sets were fantastic, but they had a lot more patience last season. Before they went for that killer ball. This season they seem to be becoming way more impatient and forcing things. Some players have performed outstandingly well, like Tiernan O'Halloran, their player of the year, but it just hasn't clicked for them. And I think that, you know, with Kieran Keane coming in next season, you see the work he's doing with the Waikato Chiefs, with the prospect of a new decision being made on a new ground, with other signings they've made, they're still in a healthy place. There's still a lot of optimism and energy in the organisation. Nigel Carolan coming on board, the coaching ticket, Eric Elwood taking over the academy. I was down there last week at their awards actually, and it was quite striking how upbeat and optimistic they are about next season, but they'd be a hell of a lot more so if they could somehow negotiate this circuitous route into the European Champions Cup next season. Be a huge boon for them.
Yeah, Bundy Aki suspended, Keith, they could really do without that level of just stupidity really in his part, and getting a 3-match ban for all sorts of stuff, back chat, not shaking hands with the referee. Like, it seems like schoolboy stuff, and maybe the ban seems a little bit harsh,
bit excessive.
But if you're going to have zero tolerance, you have to have zero tolerance.
Mm.
Yeah, look, I'm a fan of Bundy Aki. I think he plays very well. I'm also a fan of respect in the game. And it's needed. It's a very violent, tough game, and there needs to be a line drawn. So to lose him when you've lost him through injury for the year, it's tough. I look at Connacht this year and think that they did phenomenally well last year. There's going to be incredibly hard to back it up. They lost three or four players that moved out of the club. They have definitely missed Robbie Henshaw. But I also think the other teams playing against them don't rush up quite as much as they used to when they were looping around the background. They understand how Connacht are trying to play. And I would have felt that this year, for the add-on that was needed for Connacht, is the ability to put boot to ball an odd time. Not all the time, but to have a bit of a blend with it. Because if you know you're going to run it, that means the other players, if they're fit enough and have a decent defence, are able to block that down unless it's executed perfectly. And this year it hasn't, because of the loss of some of the players, to be honest. And I think they've struggled with it. I mean, I got frustrated watching Connacht some of the times. Some of their play is beyond scintillating. It's just incredible to watch. But it ends up in a ball that goes in the ground because it shouldn't have been passed. Or it ends up with the ball lost on the turnover 10 yards from the line and you're under huge pressure. And whereas by running it last year it got them out of trouble, this year it's putting them into it. I remember having Andy Leslie as a coach, took over a couple of years after Murray Kidd and Gary Owen, and he didn't do a huge amount differently from what Murray Kidd had done. Murray had given us a great, great structure, but he made it a bit easier to play. He said, you have to trust yourself a little bit. Do things that are a little bit outside of the set structure that you have and see what goes with that. And just made all the guys more comfortable to play. Sometimes it seems to be more comfortable if you can boot it off your line, if you've been under 15 phases of pressure trying to handle the ball outside your 22, just boot it down the field and start again. That takes the pressure off. It seems to make a tiny bit more sense.
All right, good stuff, lads. We'll leave it there for now. Jerry Thorne of the Irish Times, thank you.
Pleasure.
Keith Wood, thanks very much.
Cheerio.
Juventus have just scored. They've gone 1-0 up at Monaco. 28 minutes gone. We'll get the story of that from Kev after these.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. With Air Sport and all the BT Sport channels now free with your Air broadband bundle.